Morningstar of the International Treaty Council on her concerns about Native Indian burial sites and ancient artifacts at the wildlife refuge outside Burns. Also, violence in Haiti in the wake of tainted elections and massive protests, and an update from Michigan on the water poisoning disaster. At 11, host David Naiman speaks with Keith Lee Morris about his novel, Traveler's Rest. And at 11:40, it's a special Words and Pictures with the directors of the animated feature, The Box Trolls, the third feature film from Oregon animation studio Leica Entertainment. That's all coming up after Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary coming right up. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support to keep KBOO on the air. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
Want to connect KBOO on your smartphone? Now you can with the free KBOO mobile app available for both iPhones and Android devices. With the app, you can listen to KBOO live wherever you are, continuously streaming whether your phone is locked or not. Listen to our latest audio uploads. See when your favorite programs come on with our schedule. Check out our community events calendar. Read our monthly newsletters. Everything is available in one place, including posts from our Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube feeds. You don't need an account to see what's going on at KBOO. Have KBOO at your fingertips anywhere you happen to be with our new mobile app. Look up KBOO in iTunes or Google Play to download the free KBOO mobile app. Radio, live
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, January 21st, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Steve Horn is back with us today. Steve Horn, of course, is the Indianapolis-based research fellow for the Smog Blog. He's also, of course, a freelance investigative journalist. He used to be a reporter and researcher with the Center for Media and Democracy, and he'll be speaking with us today on leaked EPA water contamination. It was published by the Smog Blog. And a while back, and we're going to be revisiting that. It is all wrapped up in Cabot Oil and Gas and corruption like you've never seen before. We'll also, however, want to talk to him a little bit about a very recent article. It came out just today on in the Desmog blog, and we're going to be taking a look at a lot more of these and other stories. I'm trying to get all my papers lined up in the right order. The Desmog blog just came out with Beyond Coke, Meet the Other Right-Wing Oligarchs, featured in Jane Mayer's Dark Money, came out in the New Yorker magazine. But the Desmog blog has gone, as always, gone a little bit deeper into this and discovered more shenanigans on the part of the Coctopus that have garnered most of the headlines, including those pertaining to reviews of the New Yorker staff writer. So we're going to take a look at Dark Money. I'm going to actually ask Steve to take a look at the Dark Money story, though we do want to also, as promised, talk a little bit about Cabot Oil and Gas and how the EPA is involved, the motion that is going to be under consideration here, cites an exhibit that reveals how the Obama administration's Environmental Protection Agency ignored evidence of its own staff scientists in declaring contaminated water safe to drink in Dimock, Pennsylvania. Sound familiar? Contaminated water. Someone's signing off on it. Yeah, apparently the citizens of Flint, Michigan are not alone in their battle to at the very least get their hands on clean drinking water. This is exactly what the future is going to look like. Water privatized. That's what we're looking at here. That's what the Trans-Pacific Partnership is all about. This is where ALEC comes in. Writing and rewriting laws all to the benefit of corporate interests that are deeply involved in all of this. Corporations would love it when we have a contaminated water story because they can come in. I'm quite sure that Governor Snyder in Michigan thought possibly he could certainly line his own pockets by coming up with a cheap source of poisonous water for the citizens of Flint. And if discovered, and if that idea went south, as it obviously has, then he could turn around and very quietly in say, well, it turns out we have a natural disaster. That's what it always is when corporations do these kind of things. It turns out to be, oh, heaven knows, it's a natural disaster. Then they could turn around, of course, and make a little money on it. Disaster capitalism, thank you very much. And invite some lucky corporate CEO to step in and sell what? Bottled water, that's right. And also some other, whatever it is, techno fix for the poison that is the sickening generations, and I do mean generations. Lead poisoning is something that goes on and on and on. It's the gift that keeps on giving, right? And we also have BLM fracking racket exposed. There's the armed siege and cattle theft at Bundy Ranch are really about fracking leases. And how serious are they? Serious as death. There's a grave that is only reachable if you cross Bundy land on the top of Gold Butte. You would have to get the Bundy's permission to see this grave. One grave we're talking about here. One grave. And lo and behold, recently that grave was robbed. There's even a photograph. Some intrepid investigative journalist has slogged up through Bundy property. How they did that, I don't know. They got up there and they took a picture of it. And so we do have actual evidence. And you have to ask yourself, what was in the grave? Who was in the grave? Why was there something in there? Sometimes a cover-up actually is an uncovering. Usually that's the way it works. But right now we're going to be speaking with Steve Horn. He's back with the DeSmog blog in real life, joining us this morning on Air Cascadia. Thanks so much for being with us today, Steve.
Good to be back on. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, I believe the 16th, there was a stunner of a piece involving Cabot Oil and Gas that came out. And that knocked me sideways. But when I was taking a look online this morning, what do I find? But beyond Coke, meet the other right-wing oligarchs. And if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about that very recent piece that came out, and before we take a look at Cabot Oil and Gas situation.
Absolutely. Well, so Jane Mayer, the New Yorker staff writer, recently wrote a book called Dark Money about the Koch brothers, and that's what's mostly been focused on by the media is the Koch brothers, the history of the family itself and their role in influencing U.S. politics. But there's a lot more in that book. If you flip through it, there's a couple chapters. I think there probably should be more. That's my one criticism of the book, but there's two chapters devoted to other families that have had really important impacts on American politics, and especially, as I point out in the piece, stuff in the regulatory sphere and stuff in the legal sphere. including the Olin family, the Scaife family, and the Bradley family. And the one that I focus on a lot in my article, and Mayer focused on in her book for a couple dozen pages, is the Olin family and the Olin Foundation, John Olin. And they do not exist anymore. They spent out their money in 2005, so that foundation, as 2005, doesn't exist. But for decades, they poured millions of dollars into something called law and economics, which is a school of thought on how judges and lawyers should make and perceive legal arguments, in which free market pro-corporate point of view should reign supreme over any other legal points of view. And so that should always be part of, not even part of the calculation. It should always be the trump card of any calculation. And at first it was a fringe point of view, but they put money into many Ivy League and other elite law schools. Over time, it became a more and more acceptable practice in which people who graduated from those law schools became judges, federal court judges, and many of them are now sitting as judges. And it's become so much of an accessible practice that, as I wrote, she didn't write about this in the book, but something I'm familiar with, something called the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, or OIRA, was actually created by Reagan in 1980, and it still exists. It's existed under both, obviously, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, because there's been presidents of both parties since then, including Clinton and Obama, Bushes, Reagan, et cetera. And so really that's been a longstanding impact, at least of the Olin family. It's really, I think her book really focuses on the impact and how it's pushed the Republican Party rightward. I focus on my piece, actually, on how it's pushed both parties rightward, and particularly in something like this, where OIRA is not going to not exist. It's now a standing federal agency. And so that's the legacy of something like the Olin Foundation. That was one example I pointed out. And the piece, but probably one of the most important pieces of her book that none of the media is really focusing on, but I think is obviously extremely important for day-to-day stuff with regulations, environmental protections, air protections, pollution, et cetera.
How does this tie in, then, the timing of all of this, and with the looming Trans-Pacific Partnership? I mean,
yeah,
it's got to be.
I mean, it ties in a different way. And the way I would say is this goes above and beyond just the Koch brothers, and it's easy to point to the Koch brothers as a symbol of evil, or a symbol of greed, and a symbol of the Republican Party's rightward shift. But what my piece pointed out, again, going back to both parties moving rightward, is that ultimately this did, these policies and the funding of these foundations, other things are created for the Democratic Party. For example, the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC, which one of the first, I think either the first chairman or one of the first chairmen was Bill Clinton. DLC was a marker of the Democratic Party moving into what is now called the New Democrats, or Democrats who are more business-friendly, free market. And of course, Clinton signed NAFTA. Obama is very supportive of TPP, et cetera. So this was these same exact foundations that Mayer talks about. Unfortunately, in her book, she didn't talk about how they also were funding the Dems, but point being that this is when the Dems became supporters of things like this. I'm not saying the Dems are ever extremely progressive, but they moved rightward, and a lot of it has to do with these families that she focuses on in the book, including the Kochs, who were one of the first funders of the Democratic Leadership Council. They've since moved most of their money into the GOP, but in the early days, they were not only funders, they actually had executives who are on the board of trustees of the Democratic Leadership Council. That's what I pointed out in my article.
So what are these boys going to do? Now we are faced with the prospect of Republican candidates. Possibly there'll be a Democrat or two in future elections, but now we have the prospect of candidates so wealthy. And let me just point out that the money is not earned in any of these cases. It's inherited money, so that Donald mm-hmm. Trump didn't run a lemonade stand by the side of the dusty road and walk 10 miles to school every day barefoot with one leg caught in a trap. No, he inherited the money. And he had many missteps along the way. How can you screw up when you have money handed to you? Yet Trump did, and not enough mention is made of that.
You raise a good point about the book in general. I mean, I guess the takeaway is that none of the family is covered in the book. None of the foundations. These are not self-made people. These are people who came already from rich families who inherited the money and who got things called trusts. And then that this family trust, right, you know, they actually recreated tax law in which they were not taxed in it because they created this whole system of nonprofits and 501c3s, et cetera. And what Mayer points out correctly is that in large part, this has become a big tax shelter for elite business interests, people like the Kochs, the Skase, the Bradleys, and of course, lots and lots more. So I think that's another really important section of the book. And I would just say it's definitely a book worth reading for anyone listening, Dark Money by Jane Mayer.
And also follow up on it with a piece in the Smog blog, because that's
absolutely
a real eye-opener. It's always important to look, no matter what, even if you agree with every word of a book, to get more information. And of course, the irony is that just yesterday, 5-year anniversary of Citizens United, where the Supreme Court, SCOTUS, manages to squirt out a freebie for mainly right-wing Republican candidates. And now we have right-wing Republican candidates that don't even need the money because they've got so much of their own.
And the last thing I'll say is that the history of how Citizens United came to be as a case and the people behind it are covered very well in this book. So it's another reason worth checking it out.
Thanks so much for that, Steve. We really appreciate having you back. We always like having you on this show. People do look
Thanks
forward
for
to it.
Me.
I know I do. We've been speaking with Steve Horn with the Smog Blog, and this, of course, has been Air Cascadia for Thursday, January 21st, 2016. Rock Bergeron engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Rock. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights.